Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. As you prepare to gather or not gather around your Thanksgiving table, the topic of conversation is more than likely to be COVID-19. But these conversations lately are a little bit more hopeful as vaccines start to emerge as effective. And not only that, they also appear to be on the horizon. So let's talk about what that means for us here. We're joined now via Zoom by Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. He's an associate chairman of medicine for translational research and also a professor of infectious diseases at UC Health and the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Fichtenbaum, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here. Appreciate it.
We also have with us John Rice. He's managing director of life sciences at Cincy Tech. Dr. Rice, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start with you, Dr. Fichtenbaum. You all have worked on one of these vaccines, three of which now appear to be quite promising, one produced by Moderna, one by Pfizer, and another we learned just this week from AstraZeneca and other partners in all of those. What does this mean for us? I think the big question everyone seems to have is, when do I get this vaccine?
Yeah, so I would expect to answer that question directly that in 2021, a lot of people are going to get vaccine, but it's going to take some time and it'll have to be done in an orderly fashion because they have to be able to distribute it and produce enough vaccine.
And so, Dr. Fichtenbaum, we're all familiar with vaccines in general. A lot of us get flu vaccines every year. We've had different vaccines that we are expected to get throughout our lives at different times. This is, of course, a unique situation, a vaccine that was developed with such immediacy and such emergency because of what we're all dealing with in this COVID-19 pandemic, this new disease that was unknown to us previously. How do you expect the world population to prepare itself for this? This is something we've not seen before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, really important that people understand that, first of all, through good science, we happen to pick the right targets to really target to allow us to make a vaccine that produces an immune response. And that immune response appears to be protective against disease in the first three vaccines that have reported their preliminary findings. And that's very exciting. In science, when you can repeat something over and over again, it's a really important principle. And so I think that's good. But I think to get this around the world is going to take some time. And there's a lot of logistical hurdles. In some parts of the world, they don't have a cold storage chain that is needed for these vaccines to be able to move around. And so that may hinder the distribution of the vaccine in all parts of the world. And because this is such a catchy virus that is going all over the world, we really do need to make sure we get vaccine to everybody. And we need as many people as possible to be able to get the vaccine so that we can create the kind of immunity to not just flatten the curve, but bend it out of existence.
And that would be a follow-up question here, because as some of us get it and some of us don't, we're not sure what the order of events will be. What will life look like amid the pandemic, but also with the vaccine in use out there? So are we still wearing masks? Are we still social distancing once we're vaccinated?
Yes, I think we need to for several reasons. Number one, we need to make sure that the vaccine works in broad populations, and we have to be sure that we are not coming in contact with people who have not been vaccinated. So for the foreseeable future in 2021, still need to be wearing masks, still need to be social distancing, still need to be washing our hands, and we still need to be doing all the things to protect ourselves from getting infection. Once we get enough people vaccinated, then we will see. There's a second issue that's a little bit more complicated. The studies that are being done for the vaccine are to prevent COVID-19 disease. They are not being tested to see if they prevent infection. So it is possible that some people are getting infected with the virus that causes COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, but that the vaccine is protecting them from getting sick or having symptoms. It is also possible that the vaccine is protecting them from getting infected with the virus. But the way the studies were designed, they were not designed to answer that question. So we will not know from these studies, are the people who got vaccinated with the vaccine protected from infection as well as disease? And it will take some time for us to get other studies to truly answer that question. And let me give your listeners an example. The polio vaccine does not always prevent people from catching polio. So early on, when we gave people vaccines and we gave them the shot, which was the Salk vaccine, people would still get a short infection with polio, which would be probably no symptoms that they would feel, but the infection would die out quickly because the immune system controlled it. But there would be a little infection that would be shed from their system and they could pass it to someone else. And it wasn't until we got everybody vaccinated that we really started to see polio die off in the United States. So not every vaccine protects you from an infection, but a lot of them protect you from the disease and the consequences. So we're going to have to learn a little bit more about what that will mean in the future. But for now, what it means is everybody mask up.
And so then, when we get to a point where enough of the population is vaccinated, do we have to know the answer to that question before we're doing what we used to do, eating inside restaurants, going to sporting events, going out and being social people?
No, I think what we'll see is with all the testing that we're doing and the epidemiologists helping us out, we will start to see what I hope will be a fall in the number of cases. And as the cases continue to fall, and if they fall to a really low level, as we get more and more people vaccinated, I think we will know that the vaccine is working, and we may be able to answer that question, but it may be a posthumous answer, I hope, that will be past the pandemic once we get enough people vaccinated.
That's Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. He is Associate Chairman of Medicine for Translational Research, also a professor of infectious diseases at the University of Cincinnati and UC Health. We're also joined via Zoom today by John Rice. He's Managing Director of Life Sciences and participated in one of these vaccine trials. John, I'm so glad you could be with us. You're a virologist by trade, and now you're in the life sciences business sector. And I understand that you volunteered right away for this. What made you want to be a part of the trial?
I guess it's kind of, you know, put up or shut up. I mean, I'm a virologist by training. I understand the vaccine platforms. I understand what goes into making them. I had high confidence in the vaccines that were being developed, having spent my own part of my career working on vaccines. I thought it was just the appropriate thing for me to do to you know, lend support to it. So I volunteered for all the trials going on, and the folks at the Pfizer trial called me first before Carl's people reached out, and I was already in a trial.
So you participated in the Pfizer trial?
Yes.
And you learned that this was 90% effective. Obviously, you don't know exactly whether you received a dose of the vaccine they're working on or a placebo, but talk a little bit about the experience.
Pretty innocuous experience. You know, you go in for vaccinations regularly, you know, as children and adults, there's really no different other than, they took a little more comprehensive history. I went in, they took my blood pressure and temperature and gave me an inoculation and a bunch of instructions to follow up with regard to if I had symptoms, how to report them, and come back in 3 weeks for a booster, and come back in 3 weeks after that for a initial blood draw to see if I developed antibodies to the virus. I don't know, and they won't tell me that, maybe ever, but and then they'll follow me for a couple of years, see if I get sick and watch my blood levels. And the question will be, once it's approved, when will they give me the real vaccine? So participants will know they get it ultimately, because those that didn't will give the opportunity to get another inoculation.
So, John, most of us are watching this without your background, right? We're just regular people of the public who want to be past this COVID-19 pandemic and are looking forward to having access to a vaccine. But someone with your background and your knowledge about vaccines, your work in virology, what is this meant to watch?
Well, you know, I haven't been at a lab bench in 30 years, but I have invested in a number of companies developing vaccines, including the first RNA vaccine 20 years ago, and then recently in a universal flu vaccine, amongst other projects. And I have companies that are working on other therapies. So for me, as a virologist, it's exceptionally exciting to see, you know, virology, you know, in the forefront of everybody's mind about what goes on in science. And it's been rewarding to see, you know, the recognition of the value that science brings to solving our problems. So, as a virologist, I get lots of questions, so I get to kind of stay abreast of the field. So I've been reading things I haven't read in a while just to make sure I'm up to date on the latest in coronavirus virology and vaccinology and so forth.
So what are your thoughts on when the general population will have broader access to a vaccine?
I'm hearing that Carl knows better than I, but I'm hearing, you know, the general population probably maybe mid next year. The logistics are the issue. These vaccines are going to work, I think. I'm highly confident just based on the data we've seen. But it's you know, there's so many people to be vaccinated. There's a whole logistical campaign that goes into that. And the notion of the how they've set up this warp speed operation is really quite impressive. If you look at the wiring diagram for how they organized this and brought in all the logistical expertise from the military to do that. They specialize in distributing large quantities of different things around the world. So, you know, I think all that bodes well, but it still takes time and you still have to make enough of it. And that's, you know, hundreds of millions of vaccine doses just in this country is quite a feat. You know, now you talk about, you know, billions around the world. It's going to take some time.
That's John Rice. He's Managing Director of Life Sciences at Cincy Tech. We're also joined via Zoom by Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum, a professor of infectious diseases at UC Health and the University of Cincinnati. He's also Associate Chairman of Medicine for Translational Research there. And Dr. Fichtenbaum, we heard John say that he was part of the Pfizer trial. You worked on the Moderna trial locally. Talk a little bit about your feelings when you saw the 95% efficacy in the preliminary analysis.
Well, I think, first of all, I really want to thank John, because in my mind, he's the real hero of this pandemic, because people like him didn't have to do what they did, but they took a step and they volunteered to take the vaccine so the rest of us can be protected, and we're forever in his debt. And I'm very thankful. And what I felt like on the day that we heard Moderna, which in my mind was really, really important because it was able to confirm the Pfizer result, was I felt very hopeful and really thankful. And I really saluted all of our participants. We sent them a letter thanking them. And we thanked our staff, because it's been a dark and dreary time for the world. Nobody has liked 2020. And I think that if we were going to continue on this pathway, much like the Spanish influenza of 1918, which went for 3 years and claimed upwards of 50 to 100 million lives around the world, I think we really wanted to see a light at the end of the tunnel. And what this was a light showing us the way. And I think that's very hopeful and should make people feel a little bit more optimistic. And hopefully everybody will be able to receive this soon.
So Dr. Fichtenbaum, we've heard good news from Moderna and Pfizer based on their studies last week. And then just this week, we heard from AstraZeneca that also showed some positive results. I'm curious about the process of the research involved in these vaccinations. Is there a competitive nature when it comes to combating something that's impacting the whole world like this? Or is everyone pretty much hopeful that one of these things is going to work?
Well, I think we were all hopeful that one of them was going to work, but I think we were even more hopeful that many of them would work. Because in science, a principle that's very important is if we do something over and over again and it works, it's really true. You know, anybody could maybe walk up at the Red Stadium and hit a home run. Well, maybe not anyone, but somebody could get lucky and do that. But can they do it over and over again? Can you be Ken Griffey Jr.? And really hit the home runs over and over again. So I think that's what we like to see in science. But it is competitive in nature because each of these companies are trying to also make a product and market them. And so there are aspects of that and how it gets distributed. I think we saw that Pfizer announced shortly thereafter, Moderna announced, Pfizer re-announced. And AstraZeneca is announced. I would imagine that Janssen will be short to follow. And we know that Pfizer is going to the FDA. I would imagine that Moderna is scrambling to get quickly to the FDA. Would not surprise me if both Moderna and Pfizer get approved in a similar time window because they're neck and neck. So it is competitive in some senses. That's the way our health system is set up worldwide. It is part of our economic system. And so there are certainly incentives for people to want to be first. Being first in anything always gives you an advantage.
Well, Dr. Fichtenbaum, is there any advantage to people being specific about which vaccine they would receive, or when these do come to market, should we just expect to line up for whatever might be available close to us?
Yeah, I think right now you probably take what you can get, and that would be the best advice, but I would stick with the same one. So each of these vaccines so far have a booster, and so I wouldn't mix and match them because we have no data on what that does. So if you got the Pfizer, I would get the second Pfizer. If you got the Moderna, get the second one. The AstraZeneca, get the second one. But I think it'll be a matter of what's going to be available and what's going to be produced. I know Operation Warp Speed, for example, has made sure that there are at least 25 factories available across the United States to produce vaccine. Also to produce it in proximity so that the distribution is not quite as far. So there's places in the Midwest, the South, the North, the East, and they have a clear plan on how to get that vaccine within each state. And they've set up plans to get targets and make sure that there are institutions that can receive it. I think the wild card factor that I haven't really heard enough information on is how many of these can we make each month reliably that can then be distributed to people? Can we make 5 million doses? Can we make 10 million doses? Can we make 1 million doses? Because that speed right there is really going to determine, in my mind, how long it will take for us to vaccinate the public.
Before I go back to John, you just mentioned the booster, and I'm glad you brought that up. Talk a little bit about what we should expect in that respect. We get a shot, and then what?
Well, we're going to get a shot, and then 21 to 28 days later, you're going to get a booster shot. And many of our participants have experienced a little bit more reaction to the second shot. And that makes perfect sense to me. Why is that the case? They're not getting the virus. They're not getting sick from the virus. What's happening is they're having a normal, healthy immune response. And when your immune system becomes activated, there are a number of different proteins and different kinds of hormones, things we call cytokines that get distributed throughout the body and give people symptoms. They don't make you feel good all the time. So sometimes you feel achy, feverish, and you don't always feel perfect. The good news is most of these are mild and manageable. You take a little bit of Tylenol or ibuprofen and people feel better. Most people are able to continue about their business, but a few people will feel a little bit sicker. But this is just the sign of your healthy immune system responding to the vaccination, making the kinds of antibodies and cells that are needed to defend you against this virus.
That is Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum. He is Associate Chairman of Medicine for Translational Research and a Professor of Infectious Diseases at UC Health and the University of Cincinnati. Also with us today is John Rice, Managing Director of Life Sciences at Cincy Tech, who participated in the vaccine trial for Pfizer here locally. And John, I want to ask you about, based on your knowledge of vaccine development and distribution and the study of viruses and that sort of thing, what type of global cooperation should we expect as this type of pandemic, which obviously spreads across the globe, faces all of us? I mean, is there any precedent for this?
At the level of the scientific community, there has always been very broad international coordination on things like this. And that's evident even with this, when the sequence, the gene sequence of the virus became available, it was shared pretty quickly with everybody around the world, and everybody kind of at the same time began working on their vaccine candidates based on that knowledge. You know, we have organizations like the WHO who coordinate worldwide infectious disease management and vaccination programs. So all of those organizations exist as long as we support them. And amongst the people that are in those organizations, the cooperation is great. It's not always the same at the political level, though I think it's been pretty good so far for the most part. And then you have foundations like the Gates Foundation, et cetera, who made it their mission to support vaccinating populations in less wealthy parts of the world, and have done a lot of work on poliovirus, among others, to try and eradicate viral diseases around the world like they have been here in the U.S. So on a cooperation level and engagement level, I think it's high. I think the bigger challenge is overcoming either misinformation or fear or just ignorance about what vaccines do and why they're important. And so I'm seeing more and more commentary, in the media about, vaccines and their importance and getting vaccines and getting tested and all of that. So you have to continue to raise the awareness of the importance of this. And the reason I, try and do these things is do my part, just like Carl does, to say, look, we kind of know about these things. Here's what you need to understand about them. Here's the best information we have, and encourage, both engagement and ultimately getting vaccinations.
John, what have you learned about these vaccines and younger people? We've heard throughout the pandemic that kids aren't as susceptible to the larger problems of COVID-19, but they certainly can acquire the virus and certainly spread it. Should we expect kids to be vaccinated?
I'd defer that to my medical colleague here. My view, probably yes, but he may have some other information.
Sure.
On that.
Dr. Fichtenbaum.
Yeah, so the Pfizer study has already gone down to age 12, and there are a number of protocols, including some developed by Dr. Frank here at the Gamble Center for Vaccines at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and the University of Cincinnati. He has developed a master protocol for children, and I suspect that we will see in the next few months rapid development of these vaccines in children so we can figure out how do they respond? How young can we go? And that's what we really need to understand is what is the immune response at different ages, at age 2, at age 5, at 2 months, 6 months of age? When is the right time for us to be vaccinating children? I certainly think that we're going to have a lot of information going down to the age 12, and have that very soon. So this is a very important thing, because I think the reason why we're really seeing this pandemic explode was because we went back to in-person school and in-person college, and we're seeing lots of transmission through those contacts, many of which is asymptomatic infection, no symptoms, and therefore you're infectious, contagious, you don't know it, and you're spreading it to others accidentally.
And Dr. Fichtenbaum, I know you just mentioned the booster shot not that long ago, where we'll get a shot and then 3 or 4 weeks later, we'll get the booster shot as part of this vaccine. Is this a vaccine that we should expect to have as part of our lives for the foreseeable future, or will we just have to go through this once?
Well, I think time will tell. And I have learned that predicting many things about this pandemic makes one look quite foolish. So certainly my hope is that the immunity will be lasting, but I think we need more information on this. It is also possible that this will be a vaccine we have to get like the flu vaccine every year, but I don't think we know that information right now, and that we should give it a little bit of time for us to collect more information to see how long the immunity lasts in people like John, if it lasts a long time. And this goes away and it's not really affecting people, then we may only need the single vaccination period of the vaccine and the booster. But we'll know soon enough. I think the key right now is let's get as many of these vaccines approved worldwide as we can and get them distributed worldwide so that we can hopefully do more than just flatten the curve, but bend it into extinction.
And John Rice is Managing Director of Life Sciences at Cincy Tech. John, where do you expect that sector to go, life sciences as a business to go after this, after what we've learned as the response to the COVID-19 pandemic and the rapid creation of these vaccines?
Well, you know, one of the things that it's done is validate these new technologies as a means of building vaccines. So, you know, to go from a genetic blueprint to a vaccine on the market in a year is actually stunning. But it's not stunning when you understand the sophistication of the technology that goes into it. And that's been built up over, you know, 30 or 40 years of the development of biotechnology and all the ancillary fields around it. So I would expect in the narrow field of vaccinology, we may see many more RNA type vaccines, and they may be extended into cancer vaccines, which is actually where I spent some time 20 years ago working on one of the original RNA vaccines there, which is still being tried. So it's, you know, it takes a long time. That one has not been perfected as quickly as this one has. More broadly, it just heightened the awareness of the value of the life science technologies, you know, in our health system. There are many other areas of endeavor, you know, treating diseases from cancer to all sorts of other diseases that rely upon, you know, the advances that have been made in biotechnology, and what's been done here will be extended in other directions. And you're going to see more point of care and personalization of the diagnostic side of this. So we have, you know, now greatly enhanced the technology for doing rapid diagnostic testing. The sensitivity is not as high as we'd like to get it, but it's getting there. But we're going to see a lot more emphasis on that, and it's going to be a little bit more consumer focused than it has in the past. So that's kind of where I see it going there.
That's John Rice. He's Managing Director of Life Sciences at Cincy Tech. We've also been joined via Zoom today by Dr. Carl Fichtenbaum, Associate Chairman of Medicine for Translational Research and Professor of Infectious Diseases at UC Health and the University of Cincinnati. He was part of the research team on the Moderna vaccine. John Rice participated in the Pfizer vaccine trial here locally. John, Carl, thanks to both of you for the time you gave us. Very informative. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us on. And I wish all of the listeners a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving. Please wear your masks and wash your hands and social distance. And let's try to keep the pandemic down.
Ditto.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're going to be off on Thursday and Friday so that we can celebrate the holidays as best we can, the same way you're going to be experiencing the holidays just the best you can. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters, and you can find archives of our program online, even on holidays, at wvxu.org. We hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again on Monday.